Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Triple Click Home.
Hi, and welcome to episode 7 of Triple Click Home. And we're glad you all tuned in with us here. I'm Buddy Brandon, and joining me are my fine co-hosts. We have Pete Bosley.
Hey, everybody.
And Alina Roberts.
Howdy.
Howdy. Are you allowed to say howdy in Oregon? I don't know, they had pioneers and stuff, so maybe they are.
Would you rather I just said yo?
Yo's not very West Coast either.
Hey, yo. Not so much.
Where are you from originally, Amina?
Las Vegas.
Oh, well, that explains it.
Hey, that explains nothing.
Actually, that explains a whole lot.
All right, now that we're...
I have never been to Lost Wages.
You've never been to Lost Wages?
It's the city of sin. I see where she gets her her sense of humor now.
I was raised by teachers.
Oh, well, there you go. You know those teachers, man, in their off hours, you never know.
That's right. Although I have to say that Las Vegas being Las Vegas is not why I left. It was that the city was too overwhelmingly large.
Well, it is that.
And it's too bloody hot.
It's definitely that. So how about those Macs? Looks like Apple's going to be refreshing the MacBooks and refreshing all sorts of things. And we have a story here that says that the new MacBook Pros are going to be thinner and they're going to have solid-state drives and they're not going to have Ethernet ports. What? That sounds like a big MacBook Air.
It does. And I've had a solid-state drive in the current generation MacBook Pros too. So this really won't be that much of an upgrade to me unless the processor is a significant jump.
I think what's really going to be the upgrade is the display. And for those of us who can't see the screen, that's not really going to be applicable, but it could be really beneficial to low vision users. I know that people have mentioned that the new Retina displays on their new iPads are so crisp. In fact, even Peter has said that the graphics are just really amazing. And so from a magnification standpoint, having that Retina display as your monitor is pretty huge. Although I think we'll have to really see if that's what they're going to be giving people, because I know that there has been some speculation that that's not really possible at that large of a screen.
Well, I guess a 15-inch screen starts getting significantly larger mm-hmm. than an iPad screen, for instance, but a 13 or an 11, nah, not so much. But I mean, if that's the only upgrade that there's going to be between the Pro and the Air, I think I'll take the Air. Although it'll be interesting to see which notebooks get the Ivy Bridge architecture mm-hmm. and whether that's just going to be the Pros or whether that's going to trickle down.
Well, we also don't know that we're going to see Pro long term. We may see them merge those lines together.
Right.
That's possible.
And I've even heard rumors that the 13-inch MacBook Pro is not going to be updated.
That would be really annoying because I don't want a 15-inch screen and I definitely don't want a 17-inch screen.
But their argument to us is going to be, go get a MacBook Air.
That's exactly what it's going to be. But I want some more performance.
I'm not sure I'm ready to give up my Ethernet port.
That's the biggest gripe I have. The optical drive, I'm not so worried about because, I mean, let's face it, I hardly use it anymore. I don't put audio CDs in.
I'm with Buddy on that one.
I get almost all of my software online or off of some other thing. I could just use an external DVD drive for those like three times a year I might need one. I'm really concerned about the Ethernet port. And yeah, they have Ethernet to USB adaptery dongle thingies, but that just seems kludgy to me.
I could get away without an optical drive the majority of the time, and probably even an Ethernet port too. But my issue with giving those two things up is that when I do need either of those things, it's usually because I need it badly.
Okay. That's a point.
So to spend upwards of, when you get done upgrading it, $2,000 on a computer that doesn't have an Ethernet port or an optical drive just seems a little bit much to me.
I'm definitely more on board wanting an Ethernet port. If I had to pick between the two, I would say that I'd much rather sacrifice the optical drive than the Ethernet port.
So I'm curious, though, because I've owned my MacBook for 3 years now, and I haven't once put the Ethernet cord inside of it because I don't need to. I just use my wireless router.
I rarely use the Ethernet port, but again, when you need it, you really need it. For example, if your wireless router goes south and you need to flash it, you don't want to do that over wireless. You really don't want to do that over wireless. I mean, like, you really...
Also keep in mind that, you know, I work in a network environment I'm troubleshooting stuff that isn't always accessible from wireless. So you get to a situation where I need to do something, I need to connect to this device, and if I had to go in my bag or go back to my desk and get something, I could get kind of perturbed with that and wind up carrying around a Dell laptop.
Right.
Well, yeah. The WWDC should be happening next month, and that's probably when we'll learn what actually is going to be coming out, since this is all speculation at this point.
All speculation and rumor.
Apple speculation?
Stop. Yeah, speculation and rumors. There are lots of rumors all the time. And speaking of rumors, there was a rumor, thankfully short-lived, that Apple would no longer accept applications that had hotkeys in them. And I personally didn't give this one much credence at all, simply because the article actually said, you know, developers weren't actually informed of this, but we got it from a reliable source. That I kind of find it hard to believe that Apple would spring something on developers that major with fewer than 2 weeks, because they said it was going to take effect on June the 1st.
I can believe it.
I don't know. I mean, that's a pretty big deal, or it could be potentially a pretty big deal. I mean, it's certainly not on the order of magnitude of the sandboxing, certainly, but it strikes me that they'd be more likely to give a little bit more notice than that. And as it turns out in this article that we're linking to, that rumor didn't really have any basis. And in fact, Apple will continue to welcome applications with hotkey support. Thankfully, this is a good thing.
How many apps do we know of that actually use global hotkey support?
I can't think of one, but one thing I really like about the Mac is that you can actually define hotkeys globally, right, or, you know, and define whatever any menu action in an application you can give a hotkey to, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So good news is that it was just a rumor and it wasn't true, and we can all stop panicking, because I know there were some things on Twitter where people were pretty outraged, so we can all calm down.
In more development news and possible things that we're looking at seeing at WWDC, we're looking at the imminent release of OS X Mountain Lion. And I think the latest official word was late summer, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Although people are speculating that it's going to actually be released around WWDC time.
Anything's possible. I know that developers did get another update.
But we have an article here that's called The Battle of the Betas. And it goes into all this exhaustive detail on how Microsoft and Apple are sort of approaching the whole mobile phone and desktop convergence thing. And that's definitely worth a look, although it sure sounds an awful lot like, oh, mine's better than yours. No, it's not.
They've been playing that game for how many years now?
Yeah, why stop now, right?
Yeah.
Well, people have been playing that game since the beginning of time.
Sure.
You know, think back to the caveman and my stick is bigger than your stick.
Yeah.
I think the one thing, though, that the article points out is that they're kind of approaching a similar state.
Yeah,
but they're doing it in very different ways.
Yeah, they're approaching a similar goal and a similar, like I say, I think that they both see that the writing's on the wall here, and that we're going more mobile. And there's going to be a lot. And so both guys are trying to figure out exactly how to make this happen. And I think that we're looking at a real cultural thing between the two. Apple is a lot more sort of willing to just go wholesale into something and, oh, this is how it's going to be from now on kind of thing. Where Windows, and this is no doubt due, at least in part, probably in large part, to Windows having such a large install base of, well, we have to support legacy stuff still, and so we can't jump in completely. We have to kind of hang back at least somewhat because we have all these old applications and all these old installs that we still need to support and all this legacy software that people still need to run that they're just not going to be able to just chuck out the window and start over with. There's a real cultural divide in evidence there, I think.
I will say that as somebody who has a Mac and an iPhone, that the upgrade to iOS 5 and even Lion, they're definitely converging even more than they used to. And most of my clients that I work with, teaching them how to use their iOS devices, have PCs. And we talk about how, you know, I plugged in my iPhone for the first time 2 years ago when I got my 3GS, and my Mac talked to the iPhone and said, oh, she wants all of this. And I didn't have to do anything. It was so cool. And they've made that even better now with Lion. And that's not true for PC users. And I think that Apple has definitely created a culture that says that we know that you want to utilize the same kind of things that you have on your iOS devices. So we're going to start including them on your Mac. And that makes the Mac more appealing, right? Because now you have people that say, well, I really know how to use my iPad very well. So rather than getting a new PC, maybe I want a new Mac because they're going to talk to each other easier.
Anything that says patent in it just kind of makes my eyes glaze over and my brain shut down. Because I really don't understand what is patentable or why it's patentable. I mean, like, this next story talks about, for goodness sake, where you're going to put an antenna inside of a computer. Now, I'm a ham radio operator. I play with antennas. And yeah, duh, you put the antenna at the top, it's going to radiate better. You put it out of the way of a bunch of other metal, it's going to work better. Not rocket science. I don't understand why this is patentable or why it's a big deal, but there's a story on it anyway.
Because it's an amazing, magical placement, don't you know?
Well, the reality is that we know that based on these patent wars that we keep on hearing about, that pretty much anything and everything is patentable. I mean, even genes are patentable, which is a whole nother topic. But
wait, so does that mean that I can patent my style of dress? Because I think I should be getting some money.
I don't know,
money.
You'd have to talk to a patent board.
I should be getting some money off the way I dress on a daily basis, because I see people mimicking me. I should start suing people.
I don't know, like, you can maybe trademark that.
There you go.
The Bosley trade.
Yeah,
the Bosley trademark
it.
Look. Hey, you know those hair replacement people seem to have done fairly well with it, so.
but anywho, what we're really talking about is a patent that is for 4G connectivity in the MacBooks. And basically, the patent says that Apple may or may not someday put a 4G antenna in their MacBooks. And what that means for all of us cell phone users is that we'd be able to access the web via our cell phone data plan if we were not with Wi-Fi. And I think, honestly, that's where notebook computers are going to have to move.
But if you really think about it, though, with the advent of hotspot modes in pretty much every modern smartphone, this seems like a solution to a problem that doesn't exist to me.
But most people aren't using the hotspots with their cell phones.
So what they're saying is, we'll put an antenna in this MacBook and then we'll make you sign up for an additional data plan?
Yep.
Negative.
It's the same thing that they did with the iPad.
I still don't get it, though, because it's an antenna. Wi-Fi is an antenna, and actually the Wi-Fi antenna, the spectrum that's used for Wi-Fi isn't a whole lot higher than the spectrum used for 3G, at least most Wi-Fi. Trivia. Yes, it's also the same spectrum that's used for your microwave oven. Of course, your microwave oven is a lot more powerful, but I don't understand why this is even anything that's in contention. It's an antenna.
I don't know why most patents are in contention, honestly, but I'm not a hardware or...
Patents are a kind of an antiquated form of handling. It's been all polluted. It was originally meant to guarantee that inventors with inventive ideas were able to make money. And it's been perverted to the point now where companies have thousands upon thousands of patents about every kind of little thing. And personally, I think it's a giant racket. The lawyers have kept this going because they make buku bucks off of it. So,
no kidding.
Anyway, if you want to read more about that, we have a link in the show notes.
Your eyes, too, can glaze
over. It actually wasn't that confusing.
So if you have a comment about these patent things and you want to share that with us, leave us an iReport or call the Blab line, 866-997-2522. That spells Blab. Or drop an email to resources@serotalk.com. And we'd love to hear from you. And if you can do it without making my eyes glaze over, that's even better. Our final Mac article is actually of some relevance, especially for all those Macs never get viruses people. The Macs never get viruses people are unfortunately having to rethink that with flashback and all these other things that are starting to happen with Macs getting nasty malware. We have an article here that compares five different antivirus solutions for the Mac. Two of them are even free. I can't speak to the voiceover compatibility with any of them except one. I use the Sophos one. I installed it, and it looks like it's pretty accessible. I didn't really have any problems with it, but I installed it and then pretty much just left it alone after that, which yep. I guess is what
I'm
you're
with,
supposed
I'm
to
in
do.
Agreement with Buddy. That's the one I downloaded because I'm cheap, as we all know, and it was free.
I'm a big
and
fan
I like
of free.
Free. And the other apps that are reviewed, the most expensive one is $50, and they didn't – some of the ones that you have to pay for, they didn't have
they,
very nice
they
things
They didn't
to
seem very
out,
impressed
so.
With – any of them for one reason or another.
Yeah. And just keep in mind, if you're a basic consumer user and you just want a really simple to use antivirus scanner, you probably don't need to pay for it.
And I can't say anything about Avast for the Mac. Hopefully its uninstaller is more friendly than the Windows one. But other than that, I really, like I say, the one that I picked was Sophos because it was free and it was there. There's another free one called ClamAV, which I had for a little while, but I didn't really do anything with it, so I got rid of it. Anyone know anything about it?
Junk.
Peter
okay,
says
good job
junk.
That I got rid of it then. Go me.
For the most folks, I would say to stick with Sophos.
The important thing to all you Mac users really is to know that there are free or inexpensive antivirus options out there, and that just like on your Windows PC, if you have one, that you need to have an antivirus solution and use it periodically to make sure that your computer is running just fine.
Don't get too complacent out there because it's a on the Mac now. It ain't the world it was, and you can no longer say, we don't get viruses, because now we do. Moving right along, we're very like Apple converging macOS and iOS. We're converging into iOS. Okay, so the first thing, and I think Pete might actually be the only person to have an opinion on this, maybe, because he's the only one on Verizon. But Verizon says, yeah, sure, you can keep your unlimited data plan, but you can't get a cheap phone anymore. You have to either stick with the one that you have forever, or you have to pay full price for a new one.
So as the news of this sort of trickled out, as this Verizon executive made these comments at this investor conference, I originally looked at it and said, okay, somebody leaked some of this information and we don't have the whole picture yet, so let's hold off on the pitchforks and fire. But then, you know, as details kind of emerged on what they were planning on doing, I got progressively more irritated. And when I finally read this last piece where they said, well, we're going to kind of force everybody to switch because we're not going to let them have 4G access unless they switch, and we are going to take away these subsidies. It kind of came down to where it's like, well, it couldn't get much worse than that. So when I read that last bit there, I was pretty upset. And someone actually was walking by my office when I was reading this, and they stuck their head in and said, what's wrong? Because I was cursing. So
you?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe.
And so that's a shocker right there, yeah. Pete.
So anyway, Verizon, not cool. We probably aren't going to be able to get you to change your mind because...
No, because all the cell phone companies are right. evil. I mean, I thought we already agreed on
I think that.
That.
I think there's a law or something that to be a telecommunications company, you have to be run by jerks.
Yes.
Yeah, I...
Greedy jerks.
I tend to agree. Now, you know, and this is where it really gets me, because if we were at a place where we had good 4G... and the prices for metered data were reasonable. If I only had to pay, let's throw out an arbitrary number here. If I had to pay 50 cents per gigabyte, I could put as many devices on a data plan as I wanted to, and I could use 5, 10, 15 gigs a month of data and not be bill shocked at the end of the month, then I might not be so upset. But you get to a point where you could have a data bill conceivably in the $200 or $300 range, and, mm-hmm. you know, that just doesn't seem right to me. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see if the outcry is loud enough to get them to change their minds. If enough people complain, they'll roll back on it, just like they did with that little $2 convenience fee they were going to start charging for paying your bill. But I don't know if it's going to rise to that level or not.
I'm thinking mostly people are just...
going to bend over and take it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, well. Anyway, Sprint's probably going to be your only option for unlimited data on the iPhone.
Until they get enough iPhone users that they decide that they can't do it anymore.
It's going to come to a point for me where it's like, you know, the next iPhone we will presumably get LTE with, and, you know, I want the LTE, so even I might be forced to grudgingly switch.
The good news with Sprint is you get unlimited data. The bad news is that it's really slow.
I've got a coworker, and his phone is just so slow. It's unbelievable.
It's really slow. So unlimited data is only sort of good in theory.
Oh, you guys. It's all...
It really, no, I have AT&T.
No, see, because I think they're all
See, AT&T, yeah, well, they are, but I mean, like, AT&T...
But do you have unlimited with AT&T?
I do not. No, I have the cheapo plan because I spend most of my time on Wi-Fi like a smart person.
Well, I do too, but... I mean, that's smart,
but if you have AT&T coverage, it's going to be pretty good usually.
It is on the West Coast. It is very good on the West Coast.
Well, yeah, where you have 3G access, it seems to be pretty good. I haven't really had a lot of problem. Now, when you get into places that just have edge connectivity, you know, well, what more do we need to say about that?
Well, the other benefit is, of course, that I get to do stuff while I'm on the phone.
Yeah,
and that didn't actually apply to me until I started doing trainings. But it's huge.
Yeah, that's a big one.
The fact that I can look at any app.
I don't try to use data when I'm on the phone.
Oh, whatever.
But no, seriously, I've always been if I'm on the phone, I'm not doing really anything else.
I might have actually stayed with AT&T had they implemented their unlock policy before I left, but they didn't.
I got away from AT&T on principle alone, but more than that, they had some serious coverage issues inside a lot of places.
It's kind of like which evil thing is least abhorrent to you, I think, is kind of...
I had a dream the other night that somehow I had gotten another job somewhere else, and they're like, oh, you don't have to have a cell phone for this job. And I was like, sweet, and I threw my cell phone out the window, and it shattered on the ground.
That's sad, Peter.
But I woke up, and that was not true, so...
Moving on.
So whatever carrier you use your iPhone on and whatever carrier you use your next iPhone on, you can rest assured that Steve Jobs had a hand in it from the grave. Yes, this report, the next story says that Steve Jobs had input into the next iPhone, which was being designed before his death. Now, this isn't a huge surprise, really, because what? Anyone remember after he died, there was a story that came out that said he had designs and he had sort of a plan all the way up through like 2015 or something?
That's how the industry works. They're planning way ahead and shouldn't really be surprised. But it's a good
it's
read.
It's definitely an interesting
I call it a
article.
Gimmick for page views.
I think that the...
Yeah.
Well... well, I...
That's fair,
yeah,
Peter.
Yeah, definitely fair. And I think that... I think that the iPhone 5 will have cult status because it was the last thing Steve Jobs had his hand involved in designing or whatever. Really, people? Seriously? That's all I got to say about that. So you can see what people think Steve Jobs had up his sleeve when he designed this thing by looking at all the fine iPhone rumors that we have lined up all in one spot here. There's a link to that. It's going to be 3.5 or 4 inches. It's going to have a dual core or a quad core processor. It's going to be made out of glass or liquid metal.
I think it's going to be made out of both, actually.
Have fun, guys.
Well, I think they're going to do the liquid metal backing. I can totally see that.
I think it's going to be made of unicorns.
I'm personally so over looking at iPhone rumors because remember last year we had, well, I'm just so overlooking iPhone rumors.
It's going to be a whole new design and it's going to fly.
Yeah.
And print money.
That would be all right.
You guys were terrible Mac people.
No, we're
good. We're like, you know what, people? You could just look at the rumors and say, you're not going to find out anything until September. So why don't you just stop talking about it?
Just quit, people. You're not gonna know anything until WWDC, so just quit.
Oh, we're so not going to find out anything at WWDC.
Well, you don't know. Maybe they'll release a new iPhone.
They're not going to do it. They never. When's the last time they announced the new iPhone at WWDC?
Pretty much all of them, except the last one.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's right. Actually, it was. Whoa, wait. The iPhone 4.
Yeah, yeah, the 4, iPhone 4 WWDC, 3GS, WWDC. Yeah. The only one that wasn't announced at WWDC was the 4S.
But if they continue that trend, I think WWDC is going to be, here's my rumor. My rumor is that it's going to be the new MacBook line and iOS 6 and Mountain Lion. That's what we're going to get.
You know, all of you that don't have SamNet, you're missing out on these. We have these lovely chats that pop up randomly in the evenings. And I love it when somebody's like, oh, Pete, I heard this and I heard that. Oh, and I read this about Apple stuff. What do you think about this? And I think to myself, really? I have no idea. It's more rumors and they could quite possibly be very wrong.
Last year, the iPhone was going to get a keyboard. Remember that one?
Oh, no. Last year, the iPhone wasn't going to have a button.
A home button. That's right.
That one's been popping up forever. That one, and there was going to be a smaller iPhone, and there was going to be an unlocked iPhone for $200 unsubsidized.
Yep. Yeah, right. But let's keep on with this rumors thing, because, you know, that's fun.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Since we like talking about rumors, even if they're rumors, and we don't know what's actually going to happen, we have a nice article that kind of defines all of the iOS 6 rumors. So, as I just mentioned, I think that's one of the things we're going to hear about at WWDC. And there are some, I think, plausible rumors in this list. For instance, that Siri is going to become a fully functional application on the iPad come iOS 6. There are also rumors that the home screen is going to change its layout. I don't know. I guess people are bummed that it hasn't changed at all since the original iPhone, so they're kind of hoping that that'll change. There's also a rumor that notifications are going to become a little more usable. I don't really know how they could be more usable, but maybe more integration than they already have. There's also a rumor of possible Facebook integration, which I could see as plausible.
No, I'm not seeing it.
You're not going to see that one? No. But the one I really am kind of hoping for is that the integration of double tapping your home button when you first start your phone or you're just unlocking the phone and being able to access other things besides just your iPod controls. And so they're thinking maybe iOS 6 would allow us to access maybe our calendar or maybe our clock if we have a timer running. I know that it's kind of annoying that I have to ask Siri how much time I have left on my timer rather than going and opening the clock app. Because if you could have that in your lock screen, that would be pretty cool.
But I don't know. I think it'd get too crowded.
You think so?
Well, I'm just wondering if you have access to all that stuff in your lock screen, why lock your phone?
Yeah, how are they going to decide what's...
Because then you don't touch it and access something accidentally.
What?
He just said, why would I ever lock my screen? And it's because...
No, maybe. I said, if you're going to have access to all that stuff, why bother locking it?
Right. Oh.
If you've got all this stuff sitting on your lock screen, why not
just... I mean, that's kind of like just having a home screen.
Well, they're all speculation. I don't know. There's a couple things that I would like to be able to access in my lock screen, but I don't need it to be super complicated.
I'm all about the camera.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I'm all about having the camera on there now.
The blindies that gets mad about the whole take your picture button on the lock screen.
No, I think that's hilarious. I know. Like, why is this take your picture button? Like, can I turn that off? Like, you know, just blind people are not the only ones that use the iPhone. This is not about just us.
But we live in a bubble, Peter. Oh, but now we're going to get hate mail. All right, let's go.
Yeah, send that hate mail to resources@serotalk.com.
Heck, if you want to send it straight to me, I don't care.
You can leave a hate iReport or call the hate line at 866-997-2522, which unfortunately doesn't spell hate.
And it's very quick for me to delete things. I can...
Oh, me too.
I don't have to spend much time...
But we don't want all of you to hate us. We do want you to
Alina doesn't want you to hate her, is what she said.
Yeah, we just Pete. We just want you to hate Pete. Yeah.
That's a very comfortable place for me. I know how to deal with that. I'm used to it.
He has lots of firearms.
All right.
All right.
Other things that we can hate are people and frivolous Siri lawsuits.
Yes.
I think I agree with Apple when Apple says, get over it.
Please, seriously, get over it. It's a beta. It says so. It says it's a beta. Just stop suing Apple.
But you can read
You can go to this link
in the show notes and read all the ridiculous idiots that are ridiculously and idiotically suing Apple over claiming that Apple has falsely claimed that Siri does things that Siri doesn't do. There's one guy that says that he's upset that Siri doesn't understand him. You know, the first thing that popped into my head when I saw that was, what does he sound like?
Yeah.
Well, what I want to see happen is, if Siri can't understand you enough times in a row, it should just put up on a list as a speech language pathologist nearby. And you can go get some,
I'm sorry, Dave. Speech I therapy, didn't get yeah. that. But here's a list of speech pathologists that you can visit.
Please visit one of the following professionals.
Love it.
That's awesome. Apple, take note.
Hey, you know, I have lots of friends that are in speech and hearing. They would love the business. They're passionate about helping
there you go.
Speak more clearly.
So what's this deal with Nokia, though? I don't really understand the point, and I don't know why Apple told Siri to stop recommending Nokia. And I don't know how people were getting recommendations for Nokia in the first place.
Because they ask a question. They're asking a question, and it's asking Wolfram Alpha.
Oh, okay.
Because that's one of the search... It's programmed into Siri. So if it can't find something, then it goes out and searches that, and then it gives them a response.
Apple done fixed that, and I at least got
sure
a chuckle
really
out
did,
of...
truthfully.
See, I've never asked the question, so... I mean, I was kind of amused.
Last time I tried it, it gave me some Windows phone.
Yeah, I was kind of amused by the fact that people are asking and that it's giving this answer, but whether they fixed it or not... There's this article here that claims that they have, and that Apple's basically told Siri to quit telling other people to buy phones that aren't theirs. So yeah, you can have a look at that. I don't know, like if you take Siri's recommendation for a smartphone and you don't like it, maybe you can sue Apple too.
Or, you know, ask Siri if you should jump off a bridge. Actually, you know, I think if I remember right, when I was playing with Siri and I asked her if I should jump off a bridge, she cleverly gave me a list of local suicide prevention hotlines.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, now, you know, we should...
But of course, if you ask her where to bury a body, she asks you if you need a crematorium.
Oh, wow. Now, this reminds me, we really should put this one in the show notes. I have to find a link to it, but there's this YouTube video that was like Siri the horror movie or something. You know, where everyone gets the new iPhone. It starts out, you know, get the new iPhone and they ask, what is the meaning of life? Life has no meaning. You live and then you die.
You die. You die.
And then it goes around, you know, talking about Siri doing all this stuff, like giving directions and telling someone to go straight instead of turn or something and crash their car into a building or something like that and die. And it's like all this Siri is like killing off all these people. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Do you guys remember those videos that were the parody of the people in the cell phone stores talking about the iPhone versus the Evo?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I've always wanted to figure out what software they were using to make those, because I would love to waste a whole day sitting there making up some hilarious parody using text-to-speech engines.
I think that one was NeoSpeech.
It was, but I was trying to figure out how they had produced it, because it was kind of professional.
Those were really well done.
I think my favorite thing that I've asked Siri, actually my husband inspired this because he thought of it. If you ask Siri, does she dream of electric sheep? Her answer is that she'll find agricultural and animal locations for you to buy your cows.
Batteries not included. And speaking of electric sheep, maybe the electric sheep will run on a butane-powered fuel cell.
All right.
There's a new gadget that's being sold, at least for now, in Brookstone stores. So that means it's going to be expensive.
Yeah, but, no joke.
But yeah, you can charge your iPhone off of this thing, and it's a fuel cell. You put a butane fuel cell cartridge in it, and it'll charge your iPhone like 200 times or something like that.
Hazardous materials that's rating awesome. Of butane.
Yeah. It
just doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
Yeah, I'm thinking it might be a bad thing for flying, but.
If it's enough to power your iPhone a couple hundred times, whatever it is, I'd have my doubts.
I'm pretty sure it said butane, and I remember thinking, it doesn't sound very safe.
Fuels that are either like butane or hydrogen, stuff that explodes.
Yeah. Is extremely flammable.
I mean, it's one thing to have a fuel cell in an industrial environment where it can be secured and regularly inspected by qualified people and all that jazz, but it's a completely another thing for me to be like, oh yeah, I'm carrying around this fuel cell in my backpack.
Hey, well, you know what, Peter? they let people rent.
I'm sure
rent.
The TSA would have lots of fun with that.
They let people rent turkey fryers for Thanksgiving, and they burn down their houses. So yeah, I guess somebody has a turkey fryer for your iPhone,
and they blow up their house. Well, usually that's a pretty contained. You know, they're gonna cull themselves from the population, which frankly I'm okay with. But yeah, you know,
hold my beer and watch this.
But, you know, something like a fuel cell could become quite a large explosion depending on its capacity, like beyond the point of a single house.
From what the article said, it's pretty tiny. Maybe it wasn't 200, but it was quite a few times you could charge your iPhone off of it in any case. But
one of our wealthy friends butane? Will have to go out and buy one, because as you mentioned, if they're being...
Yeah, maybe Mike Calvo will buy one
Mike's
and review
too smart
it.
To there allow we go. Something well, bug Mike. With that much explosive properties in his house.
You think so?
I don't know. He likes the gadgets, though.
We'll see.
Speaking of gadgets, are we really talking about the mini iPad again? Yes.
Like somebody pointed out on Twitter the other week, isn't the iPad mini like an iPod? Well, actually, said iPhone, but I'm thinking iPod, really.
But if you're interested in reading every mini iPad rumor that's ever come out, we've got them in our show notes. But you know what? The three of us don't think it's ever going to happen. So if we're wrong, you can call us up when Apple announces it, and you can call us liars.
That's right. And I'll just state categorically for the record, I've got a pretty piss poor record at prognostication. So I fully expect that phone call.
All right.
This next story I'm actually kind of excited about, if anyone will actually do anything with it. And that's secure voting with your iThing. If we can actually figure out electronic voting and allow it over something other than actually going to a polling place, I think this would be kind of neat.
Please, we can barely figure out paper voting and electronic voting that
on
paper.
Well, the other thing is that, like, regardless of where the encryption happens, the conspiracy theorists would love
Well, let me tell
this.
You guys, I've mentioned this before. Oregon has probably the most accessible voting option in the whole entire country. In fact, this time around for the primary, I was emailed a link to my HTML ballot. I then logged in with my credentials. I was then taken to a page where I put my votes in, and it's just an HTML document. I then told it that I wanted to print it. I Ooh. Saved it as a PDF, and we vote by mail here in Oregon, so I printed it on my printer, and bada bing, bada boom, I was done. I didn't have to go anywhere. I feel like in this country, if we ever want to increase voting, one of the things that has to change is most of the states need to get away from this idea of showing up at a polling location on a specific day. And I know a lot of states have early voting, and that's helpful. But you still have to get to where you need to be. And usually it's a random place that you've probably never been before. And
it's always an elementary school.
Right, exactly. And so it's kind of a crowded place, and you're surrounded by all these people. And I know that they've had issues with the electronic voting machines, and you're going to get people that are going to say, okay, well, everybody, it's going to get hacked into. That's the real concern. Something will go wrong. And I guess that's possible, but I feel like we really do need to consider the option of moving in a direction that's really useful and usable by almost everyone. Polling locations is costly and very frustrating, in my opinion, and I guess I say that because I don't have to do it anymore. I only had to do it once.
Well, the problem I have with electronic voting and mail-in voting and all that, not to say that that's a bad idea, is that polling locations offer you somewhat of a measure of assuredness that things are being fairly counted, because
you are who you say you are.
A lot of people around from both parties – So it's not like the Republicans or the Democrats or, you know, one party is running a specific polling area. You've got people on both sides of things. They're monitoring things, paying attention to what's going on there. So you put yourself in a position where you have a lot less chance that there's any shenanigans going on.
Yeah, I don't know. Oregon has successfully voted by mail for years now. So I think that that argument is kind of bunk in the sense that we have the option of putting it in the mailbox and sending it that way, or you can take it to a drop box. And we know that those drop boxes.
What assurance do you have that it's coming? Okay, it comes into a distribution center. You know, who's paying attention to it?
It goes to my county elections office.
Right. Yeah, but how do we know that it's you that voted?
Because my signature has to be on the ballot. That's required by me.
Okay. I mean, I can forge anybody's signature pretty easily.
I mean, you have legitimate concerns, and that's fine. But they haven't found any evidence of fraud in states that vote by mail. So I don't know
if there's any more fraud or any less fraud in states that vote by mail or not. But
there's a lot less transparency of the processing of things. I feel you've got it going to a county elections board that may or may not be properly overseen. You don't know what's happening to your ballots when they hit that processing center. You never see that thing again.
No, but you don't know what's happening at your polling station either.
Like I said, at a polling location, there is a broad cross-section of representation there. And those people all have a vested interest to watch out not only that their people are doing things correctly, but the people on the other side are as well.
Right. And if there was any evidence that Oregon had issues with fraud, you might have a good argument. But I think that if we're looking at accessibility and convenience, polling places are going to have to go away. That's just my opinion. I know there are people who don't agree with me. But being able to vote on my own, in my own home, is pretty cool. And it's pretty huge from an accessibility point.
I think we've definitely got enough in the way of technology that we can ensure that that a ballot is secure. Now, whether we can ensure that that ballot comes from who we say it comes from, that's another question. I think we'd have to talk about digital signatures and digital certificates and all
that
sort of
thing. See, I scoff at the idea that you could centralize a system and make it secure. That's about the funniest thing I've ever heard. You give me a computer system and I'll show you where it's been broken into.
Well, sure.
Yeah, yeah. You just have to take out one thing at that point.
There's no perfect system. We don't have a perfect system in this country. That even with the polling systems, things have happened before. Right. I mean, there have been problems.
Like dead people voting and dogs voting and, the list goes on. We don't need to talk about Florida.
Yeah.
Ever.
Oh, you just had to go there.
And if you're from Florida, give us a call on the Blab Line at 1-866.
Now the hate will be directed at Alina.
That's right. That's cool by me. And that includes you, Mike Calvo, Mr. Orlando. Gosh.
I've been wondering when we were going to see this story, actually, but looks like iOS 6 may have, Apple may have its own mapping solution built in, finally. Now, and I've been wondering when we were going to see this story, because like a couple of years ago, Apple bought at least one mapping company.
I wouldn't hold my breath for this one, actually.
I don't know. Like I said, I've been wondering when we were going to see this story, because they bought this mapping company in 2009 or 2010, and we're still seeing Google Maps.
Mm-hmm. But think about the size of this mapping company and the data set they have available to them versus Google.
True, but Apple also has its issues with Google at the moment.
Again, it's a rumor, and we all can hope. I sincerely hope that we'll see it, because I would like to be able to use the map app on my phone with some success, as opposed to being frustrated that Siri turned it on and I have to go turn it off.
Here's a map to your location.
Thanks, Siri! Yay! Too bad I can't see it.
Right. So speaking of being able to access maps, there's a link to a sort of a, I guess you'd call it an editorial on, do we believe that Sendero can pull off an accessible wayfinding application for the iDevices that people will actually buy? And there are a lot of interesting and thought-provoking questions here. And I sincerely hope that they can pull it off. I'm just wondering where, at what point we're going to be able to meet them in the fact that they're used to charging for the kind of software that they've traditionally released versus what average blind people are going to be willing to pay, especially on a platform where we're used to an expensive app being $50.
They're not going to find any support for a $500 GPS application.
Clearly not.
I promise you that right now.
What we know is that Mike has alluded to the idea that it would be a subscription. And financially speaking, that's probably one of their smart moves, you know, that you pay a subscription. And if you end up not liking the application, then you don't have to keep it. It also allows them to have a stream of funding coming in on a monthly basis. And, you know, I have a bias, obviously, because I work for them. But I don't know any more than any of you. And even if I did, I wouldn't say anything because I'd get myself in big trouble. But what I can say is that Mike really does care about this issue. He is passionate beyond passionate about the blind being able to orient themselves and go where they want to go, regardless of whether or not they know where they're going.
Actually, I totally believe that. I don't have any.
I don't have any trouble believing that either. And I think that.
So what I'm saying is that they're going to do their best to make this.
Oh, I agree. Now, but where my concern is that are they going to be able to meet, and are we going to be able to meet them halfway? Because you got the people that are saying, well, you know, I'd pay $20 for an app that does basically everything that their $1,500 product does.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's just not real.
Right.
That's not realistic.
No.
Navigon is a $50 app, and it doesn't do everything that Sendero.
No, it doesn't. And it was $80 when I bought it.
Do,
I mean,
does.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't $50 when I bought it.
Oh yeah.
When
I bought it, it was same.
I think what it comes down to, at least for me, is, and as someone that has a little bit of knowledge of how the app store and all that stuff works, they're going to have to kind of make a stab in the dark and say, this is the price point at which we believe we will get a large enough sector of this available community to pay to make it worthwhile to us. Because what will happen is they'll either price it too high, in which case they'll get less people buying it and probably a little bit more money, or they'll price it low enough where the quantity of extra people they'll get will make up for the smaller price. So it's a balancing act, and it's a delicate one. It's one that nobody can necessarily predict without a lot of kind of trial and error and data available to them. So I wish them the best of luck on that equation, because it would not be an easy thing to decide.
I would encourage that our listeners go on to the AppleBiz forum and read the comments and provide them yourselves. And I will do my due diligence and alert Mike that people are talking about this, and I would encourage people to continue communication with them, because they listen to their customers and they're going to do their very best. You know, obviously there are limitations and there are things that they have to decide as a business, but I do encourage that people contact Sendero and let them know what their concerns are and let them know that they want to be beta testers, so that when this app becomes available, that we can all be a part of this process.
And I feel bad for the poor person answering those emails.
Thanks, Peter. It's not me, thankfully.
But
you just threw them under a giant bus.
Like a double-decker bus.
I think I'd rather be shot.
But to put a downer on this and to sort of make this a little bit, even a little bit less comfortable for Sendero. We have an article here that says that fully 59% of apps for mobile devices don't even break even.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's kind of
knowing enough developers myself, I can vouch for that
statement. Well, okay, so like newsflash here, apps aren't any different from any other market commodity that's being traded.
That's right.
They're not any different from any other good or service traded on any other market.
Well, you do have to consider, and I don't know if they put this into their little equation, there are many app developers who are not developing apps to make money. Like, that's not even their whole point of doing it. You have organizations that release apps for free because they want to make sure that you have other ways of communicating with them. So like radio stations, as an example, unless they're ad supported, I guess. But I think you're right, buddy. It's just another example of the reality of of being in business, right? That for most people, being an iOS developer is probably not their full-time job because they wouldn't be able to pay any bills.
Right. You know, if you're talking about selling a $1 app, you've got to sell a whole bunch of those.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're talking about, you know, competing with, you know, several hundreds or even several thousands of apps in the same category, you're looking at limited shelf space, limited visibility that you're going to be getting. So you've got to do something to put yourself out there. And unfortunately, sometimes that means money that a lot of smaller developers just don't have. But again, like I say, apps or really anything online, any online ebook or anything like that is no different in that respect than any other physical good or service that you might think of. The laws of economics still apply.
To end this segment, we want to talk about how, yay for the blind community, we got into a big magazine. Yay! twice.
Twice, right. Yet.
So The Atlantic did two articles that talked about how the blind are using the iPhone. The one that we first talk about, it's called How the Blind Are Redefining the iPhone, and it mentions some of my fellow Matilda Ziegler writers, which I thought was really cool, and how they're utilizing the iPhone for their benefit. And I felt like this was huge because The Atlantic has so many subscribers and readers, and I'm hoping that what'll happen is that people would have read this article and maybe they have an aunt or a grandmother or their mom is losing their vision and they didn't even know that the iPhone had accessibility built into it for whatever reason that is, because Apple doesn't talk about it enough, maybe. I don't know. But now they can go, hey, these people are utilizing this phone and they're using it successfully and they're using it to make their lives better and more independent, and maybe I should recommend it. Or maybe somebody with low vision will see the article and say, hey, maybe this is something that I should use as a way to make my life better. And so to me, it was really, really great that our story of how Apple has created a device that is really user-friendly to those of us who are blind or visually impaired made it into a magazine that's as big as The Atlantic.
All hyperbole aside, and there was plenty of hyperbole in this article.
Oh, yeah. As with all journalism.
And oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, but all of that aside, and certainly there are some points that I don't think I would necessarily agree with, but on the whole, the article was really well done, and the exposure is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Most articles like this end up being, oh, look at that amazing blind person and the amazing things that their amazing technology does. Isn't it amazing?
Yes. Aren't we amazing?
We are, and wonderful.
Well, I'm amazing, but it has nothing to do with any of that.
Thanks, Peter. He's so humble.
But this article really didn't do a lot of that, certainly not to the extent of that some have, and I think that overall it was an extremely positive portrayal. I got more out of it, more of a, this is available. You probably didn't know that this was available. It's pretty revolutionary, and this thing that you have in your pocket is really doing some interesting things, and here's what they are, and here's what the potential is. And I think that's pretty neat, and it's certainly a nice change from the usual amazing and wonderful syndrome.
I wonder if this will change the frequency with which I get people coming up to me like, oh, you can use the iPhone? You just must be really amazing in order to be able to use that. It's like I found myself resisting the urge to flip my knife open and put it at the base of somebody's neck and be like, do you think this is amazing too?
Peter, no violence.
Calm down.
please do not report Peter too. To the authorities. He hasn't actually done anything wrong yet. No, but I understand, Peter. I get so many people that are like,
oh, I completely.
Are you using the iPhone? Do you have some kind of special software on it? And I go, no, it's actually on your iPhone too.
But it's just a piece of glass.
They're just flabbergasted. Or is that thing talking to you? Yep. Let me show you how. And then they're just in awe. And that's nice, you know.
The big thing that I really disagreed with strongly with the article was when they said that the iPhone was as revolutionary to the blind as Braille, or whatever it was that they said in that vein. And no.
Yeah, that's pushing it. I will say that it's revolutionary.
Oh, for sure.
That it has done things that I never even imagined doing even 5 years ago. I really didn't imagine living in that world where I could use the same device as my peers and not have paid anything extra for it. That's pretty huge. Now, is it Braille? No, it's not Braille.
Yeah. Revolutionary. Yeah. Opens lots of doors. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. Literacy? Nah, not so much.
Except they can be attached to Braille displays.
They can.
Which is not something that all devices do.
Yes, they can.
And for all you kids out there, just because you have an iPhone doesn't mean you don't have to learn Braille. So
that's right. And texting is no excuse for poor spelling.
That's right.
I hate text messages.
After the break, your emails, comments, and much more right here on Triple Click Home.
Hey, what's up? Thinking about you. XOXOXO. Want to snuggle, ... JK. Hit me back. You getting these texts? ? We should hang later. I miss you. Holla at ya, boy. Holla back. Holla back. Holla back. Are you at home? Where are you? What are you doing? OMG. You are making me mad. Are you with your ex? You better text me back. I'm waiting outside your house.
Relentless, aggressive texting is like sending an angry robot to deliver your message. When does the robot become dangerous? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com.
Thatsnotcool.com.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
I want to thank everybody who actually does send us iReports and emails. We do appreciate them. We do listen to them. And so we encourage you to continue to contact us and give us your feedback. And I'm glad to hear that most of our listeners are very happy. We got an email that asked about using Zombies Run. And I had the same problem. And I reached out to people on Twitter, and thankfully they answered my question. So when you buy the app originally and you launch it for the very first time, VoiceOver doesn't say anything. There's no controls. You're like, why did I just spend this money? You guys said it was accessible. So you need to open up your app switcher, take it out of the app switcher by closing it, and then relaunch it. And once you launch it for the second time, it should work just fine. And I'm sorry about that confusion. I should have mentioned that during the podcast. I thought maybe that I had. But for anybody who wants to get Zombies Run, just being aware that if you are a VoiceOver user, you need to open it up. It's not going to say anything to you. Take it out of your app switcher. Launch it a second time. And once you've done that initial closing of the app, it never does that ever again. I've never experienced that problem since I've used it. So, again, sorry about the confusion. And happy zombies running after you.
And pick up the underpants.
Yes, and pick up underpants. It's very important.
Let's listen to an iReport here from Holly. Thanks for calling and leaving us the iReport. Holly, here she is.
Hi, this is Holly. I'm calling in reference to an iReport that was played on Triple Click Home. It was about the desire for raised Braille vibrations on the touchscreen, and how the commentary was that this was not technologically feasible. However, something interesting came to my attention lately, that there is a company developing an overlay of sorts, for lack of a better term, that will cause textures to be on touchscreens, and this is a mainstream thing, but according to the person that emailed me the article, it has applications for possibility of touchable Braille on the touchscreen. It's called Senseg, S-E-N-S-E-G. I just thought that would be of interest to the community. Thank you.
Thanks for that comment, and we'll be interested to watch the development on that. And see what comes out of it. Maybe we'll have tactile iPhones at some point in the future. Jamie Paul just got his iPhone recently and is going through learning to use that. And he has this month's Triple Click Quick Tip.
Hi, I'm Jamie Paul with this month's Triple Click Quick Tip. I'm sure there have been many times that you've been listening to music on your iPod or your iPhone, and you've hit the home screen, gone away from the player controls, perhaps done something else as you were listening to music, and then locked the screen. Sometime later, you realize that you wanted to quickly access the player controls, perhaps to move to the next or previous track, adjust the volume, that sort of thing. There's a really easy way you can do that, even from a locked screen. Simply double-tap the home button, and you will find the player controls active. That's all there is to it. A very simple tip indeed, but one that's quite convenient and makes accessing the player controls on your device quite handy. Do you have a question or a tip of your own? Send us an email to resources@sarotalk.com or leave us an iReport on iBlink Radio. We'd love to hear your tip or perhaps answer your question. Reporting for Triple Click Home, I'm Jamie Pauls.
Thanks, Jamie. And let's move on and do some entertainment news here. Looks like Foxconn can't make up their mind whether they're telling us about the Apple TV or not. There was a report that said that the chief executive at Foxconn alluded to gearing up to make the Apple TV, and then a few days later he said, no, I didn't. Didn't say that. Didn't say it at all. Even though we bought this TV manufacturer and we bought a big old part of Sharp from Japan and we're doing all this other stuff. Nope, didn't say it. We never comment on our customers.
Especially our biggest, shiniest, most expensive customers.
Exactly. We never plans. Do that. Never
it
do
it. It didn't happen. It's all a figment of your imagination.
Did not happen. We did not say anything about no stinking Apple TV.
But what it does mean is that so, we might, you can, in fact, be seeing a TV from Apple. But again, in a couple of years, or it's all speculation. And again, we can speculate and prognosticate all day long, and we might be wrong.
Well, and a couple of years is just long enough that either A, we'll have forgotten about it by then, or B, they can just say, well, something changed, and so it didn't happen after all, because something changed. Foxconn? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Or maybe it got lost in translation.
Yeah, it was that Chinese to English thing. Yeah.
Chinese is pretty confusing.
Well, I believe that. It's funny because, it's very very tonal. And somebody actually I don't know if this is true or not, but this history teacher I had told us in our history class in high school that there are no tone-deaf Chinese.
Oh, I so don't believe that.
I don't believe that.
I think that being tone deaf would be a real disability for speaking Chinese, but
yeah.
Be that as it may.
Don't you guys remember that? Oh, maybe he wasn't Chinese. There was that awful guy who tried out for American Idol.
Oh, William Hung!
Yeah!
William Hung! Oh, man, he was awesome!
He was so bad.
He was awesome. He was so bad, he was awesome. Like that pants on the ground dude.
It's like those dogs that are so ugly they're cute or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, but let's talk about our rock star, or who apparently the sighted community has decided he's a rock star.
Yeah, because he'll tell people why they put Braille on the ATMs and drive up ATMs.
Yeah, and how to use his iPhone.
And things like that. There are lots of YouTube, and seriously, is his name really Tommy Edison?
It really, really is. I don't want to diss on Tommy. And I think it's cool that he's become some kind of YouTube star.
No, I think it's great.
He's doing
his... And actually the S**** sighted people say to blind people was pretty funny, I gotta say.
Yeah, I believe it.
S****
I'm not sure. I don't know how you guys are representing us. I don't know. I feel like I should just leave it there. Because
I do too.
I think it's cool what he's doing, but on the other hand,
not.
Well, this is the elitist in me talking, so he's not elegant. He's not...
Elegant?
I don't know. And I find his film reviews to be... Wanting.
I've never been accused of being elegant either.
You're more elegant than Tommy Edison.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if he's getting stuff out there and he's doing stuff, which is cool.
So I encourage people to read the article and to visit his YouTube page and even read his film critiques. He does have an interesting perspective, and it's cool that we have a film critic, I guess, that is getting recognition. So thank you also to The Atlantic. This was also another piece that was in The Atlantic. So our stories are being put out there, and I think that's the most important thing.
We're getting positive press that isn't smarmy and icky.
Yes. Although there is a little bit about how amazing Tommy is.
Yeah, I really can't have it all, I guess.
Right. I think we're always going to be amazing. I think we just have to accept it.
Well, I know I'm always going to be amazing, but it's not going to have anything to do with being blind.
And he will never be humble either.
Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. Anyway,
exactly.
Sorry.
Yes.
With apologies to Mac Davis.
Wow, who? Buddy. Wow, buddy. You just
dated
yourself.
I totally did.
Wow. Oh, no.
Coming up next, an interview about the iGrill.
And it's actually really cool.
It's not a grill, really, but it's useful. A thing for your grill.
Welcome to the Serial Talk podcast. Boy, this is interesting. I'm flying solo today. Jamie is out, so I will be conducting our interview today. So, Chris, you're going to have to bear with me a little bit. I'm not used to this. But I have the pleasure of sharing the place today with Chris Allen, CEO, and I would assume founder of iDevices. Chris, I came across your company in my quest for an accessible experience to be able to use my Bradley smoker. Not only do blind people like to eat barbecue, but we like to cook it as well. So, as I'm sure many people do. And before we get into the iGrill and what it does, let me give you an opportunity to do a shameless promotion for your company. Please be as shamelessly self-promoting as you possibly can. And I know that you've got a really cool product coming out that I want to review, and our users are going to want us to review and talk about after you talk about it. But do tell us. Tell us a little bit about iDevices and what is it, what do you do, and what's your kind of your corporate goal?
iDevices was born out of iGrill, basically to build more app-enabled products that work with the iPhone, the iPad, and the iPod Touch, as well as we're branching into the Android market. And with the launch of our iGrill product, obviously we're helping grillers and cookers alike make sure that their meat's cooked to the right temperature and allowing them to smoke meat and keep it in various peak ranges and all that sort of good stuff. We do this all through our patented Bluetooth technology, which gives folks about 200 feet of range with a standard Bluetooth connection, which is a vastly greater distance than a typical Bluetooth with a headset, which is usually about 30 feet. So utilizing that same technology, we have what I believe you're speaking about, a product called iShower coming out in mid-June. And June 15th is actually the launch date. iShower, no, we don't control your shower. We are actually streaming audio from any Bluetooth-enabled device, both Android, PC, Mac, iPhone, iPad, directly into your shower through that same 200-foot Bluetooth range. And the nice part about it is it's going to give you the control features that a lot of the speakers out there are lacking today. You'll be able to, you know, go forward, back on your songs, play, pause, as volume controls right there on the unit. And then it also gives you a time of day as well. So one of the really good features is if you have a family and you have you yourself, your wife, your kids, it does up to 5 users. So you jump in the shower, you don't want to listen to your kids' playlist and Justin Bieber and everybody. You can choose your user number and then go ahead. It'll pair up automatically as long as the device is in range and start streaming whatever audio you want.
That's going to be really cool because you're going to be able to hit your iPod or your iPhone or your iPad without even removing it from your room for the most part, usually.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. You'll be able to, you know, one of the top returns for phones is water. That's why Apple has a little blue dot inside. You know, everybody lies. Oh, no, I don't know why. It just stopped working. Typically it fell in the toilet or in the sink when you're shaving or what have you. So you can leave your device 200 feet away. We'll automatically pair up to it and start streaming that audio. And then we also stream whatever audio you're listening to. So it could be Pandora, iTunes, it could be a YouTube video, could be a movie. We'll stream whatever is coming across right in there. So it could be your podcast right here, listening to it in the shower.
And I certainly hope that people do listen to our podcast, especially in the shower. It's good to know that people listen to us wherever, and they do. You know, I know that the experience with iGrill, when we contacted you guys, it was like, really? Blind people grill? you know, not quite as open as that. It was just like, oh, how interesting. The thing that excited me so much about iDevices and the way that they dealt with, we were having a problem, folks, where whenever you would get into the monitoring of the iGrill on the iOS device, it would crash VoiceOver. I guess because it changes dynamically. I don't know exactly the nuts and bolts of it, and that's beyond my pay grade. But, you know, the bottom line is that it was not working well. And as many of us blind folks do, Chris, we reached out to the company. I advocate for our listeners to be self-advocating. We are consumers, and our dollar, of course, is as green as anybody else's, and our credit card is as filled as most people's. So, you know, it really comes down to saying, coming to a company and saying, hey, listen, I really like your product, man. But, you know, if I can't make it work, it's going to have to go back in the box and go back to the place I bought it from. And in most cases, you know, many, many companies have been very receptive. Oh, we didn't even think about that market. We didn't know. And a lot of companies don't know that many, 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 many blind people have iOS devices. And we do, we are more and more of us buying Android devices. Although I got to say, for the record, Android accessibility is not as compelling a deal as the iOS device. And, you know, to the rest of the people on the podcast and the other Serotalk podcast network people, because I'm on the microphone now, so I get to pontificate about what I believe about Apple. And my experiences thus far with Android and accessibility have been less than stellar. But in all fairness to Android, many blind people have had a great experience with Android and accessibility.
I can with regard to Apple, because we do deal closely with them, and they are advocating VoiceOver and accessibility is their talking point every meeting that I'm in. I go out to Apple Corp 10 times a year, and I deal with some of the above my pay grade people over there. And so they are definitely keenly aware of that, and it's been a core focus of theirs, I think, since the beginning.
But, you know, it's interesting to me how there was, when the iPhone first came out, Chris, all blind people, and I think I was as loud as anybody else, was like, oh, we can't use it. It's a flat piece of glass, and you know, we don't want that phone anyway. You know, give me my old Windows phone with buttons, or my Nokia phone with buttons on it. Bah, humbug. And now, I mean, I've got two iPads in the house. My wife has an iPhone. My kid has an iPhone. I have an iPhone. And the thing is that as the, well, my kids are pretty geeky, but as the daddy geek in the house, everybody always brings me their toy to fix, you know, and of course, up to this point, I haven't been able to do that. And Apple enabled me to be that dad that can fix their kids' problems. Not only that, but to have the ability to be independent with my device and pay the same amount of money prior to Apple's, being, you know, incorporating VoiceOver into their device. Chris, a blind person would have to pay hundreds of dollars to get that type of feature on a phone. So for many blind people, it priced us out of the marketplace. And of course, it never created enough consumers for a company such as yours to give a rip if you made a product that worked for us or not. But back to your company, because that is really the point of this interview, is to tell people how excited I am about just what a great corporate environment you've created, Chris, and to just publicly thank you for such a great turnaround and such a fast turnaround. Guys, within days, I got an email from a developer, and I appreciate, and by the way, I did not run into your group saying, oh, listen, I'm from a podcast and I'm going to do all these reviews. And if you don't, I'm going to write nasty things about you on Twitter. That wasn't the deal.
No,
you know, I just came and I said, look, I'm blind. I'm trying to use the product and it's not working for me. And the girl was like, wow, that's so cool. You know, and we spoke for a little while and I wish I had written her name down.
I think it was Livia in customer service.
Yeah, well, she's awesome. And she turned me on to a developer And he contacted me, and this guy was relentless about making sure that the thing worked. He did modifications to the code. And I will say for the record, because there is a written review that goes along with this, Chris, there are still a couple of minor accessibility hurdles to overcome because time is money, people. And Chris's company, like anybody else, they have to stay on a development schedule. And running a number of development schedules myself, I got to believe that when we did that, and when I mentioned, you know, that I was having a problem, I got to believe that accessibility was not necessarily on that. I didn't just happen to call on the day that accessibility was on the roadmap. I sincerely believe that you guys stopped the presses and fixed this problem. And for that, I am so grateful, because I had just bought a Bradley smoker, which happens to be a very blind friendly in its way of being used, and we're doing a whole podcast on it, in fact, in another segment, not for this podcast. But it was a wonderful product that I could not use independently as a blind person, because I constantly had to ask people what the temperature was. And even though there are a couple of talking thermometers in the marketplace, it just so happens that they did not work efficiently to do what I needed to do. This thing's got two probes, y'all.
Yep.
You put one in the meat, and you put one like in the smoker itself, so it tells you the degree, you know, the
ambient air temperature.
And the air temperature, and then the meat temperature. It was amazing. And you can flip through your iPhone, and he's right. You can walk almost a couple hundred feet away. Now, the one thing I did find, of course, is those big thick walls in my house did get in the way every once in a while. But the software was very quick to let me know that it was disconnected. And there are a couple of setbacks, which I have informed the developers about, and we've turned over a copy of the review to iDevices. So it's not perfect. But, you know, yep. Being in software development, I really got a kind of it's a rhetorical question. And that is, what software is perfect? You know, I mean, when are you finished, right?
No, it's a constant evolution, that's for sure.
How did you come up with this, man? I mean, what would possibly possess you to come up with a grilling device for the iPhone? What was the challenge that you dealt with that? You know, why did you do this? I mean, there's a million thermometers.
Yeah, there's been wireless thermometers forever. I just got sick and tired of carrying around that little thing that you put on your belt that would tell you when the meat was done. I said, you know, if I have my iPhone in my pocket all the time, it's got to go there. It's got to be an app. It's got to be more interactive and a lot more fun. I think what you'll see, and probably some of the things that we're still working on, is we're also opening up the Facebook and Twitter social networks to the grillers and creating a little network. So you'll be able to post pictures and hear about what other people are grilling and cooking around the world.
Yeah, I did tweet a couple times from the app that I was grilling.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, it becomes a more interactive and a fun user experience, and also allows us to constantly change the product. What app enabling a product does for the company, you know, bringing the product to market, is really gives them the ability to change the user interface within days. I mean, an app update is all it takes to completely change the user experience. You know, if we wanted to redesign it and relaunch it, we could do that very easily, and the product may stay, you know, exactly the same, but the user experience is entirely different. So that's when I brought it to market. I brought it to Apple in 2009. Apple said, you know, we love this. We want to see it come to market. We'll help you. They stepped up with their engineers and working with my engineers and made it happen. Came to market in 2010, Christmas time, and has really been on a tear ever since.
No, and it's won some a number of awards, and the price point is not bad. It is $79. I found it on Amazon, and there's a link in the show notes. I found it for $79 on Amazon for the dual probe. Now I know that's significantly less than I've seen it for in other places.
Yeah, it's come down, and it's we're trying to make it as friendly in terms of its price as we can. There's a lot of technology in it, so it does require obviously a higher price point than a stick-in thermometer and instant read, but obviously that isn't going to help out the blind folks that are listening to your podcast.
Well, you know, I reviewed as part of the research for this, Chris, I reviewed an Oregon Scientific thermometer, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I hope I don't goof it up, but it's Oregon Scientific, I'm pretty sure. And it was a talking thermometer, and they're like $44. So when you think about that, first of all, the letter I in front of anything immediately puts a premium on it. You can have an eye nose cleaner, you know, or whatever, or ear cleaner, back scratcher, and it'll be immediately five times more expensive sometimes than something else. So I means I don't know. It doesn't mean inexpensive, but
dollar bills.
Yeah, there you go. But the thing is that really, when you look at it for the level of independence that it gives, in particular, a visually impaired person, this is just bar none. I mean, it is an amazing product. I strongly suggest you guys go out and get one of these. And I cannot wait to play with the iShower and to tell everybody what it's all about and report on its accessibility as well, because I know that there's no app for that. It is an independent product.
Just connects through Bluetooth.
Yeah, so that is going to be so cool.
And one of the things that with the iGrill that I think may be of big help too is that versus an Oregon Scientific where they have just simply, you know, the various foods, we go through the whole list of foods and we allow you to customize it too, but we give you pretty much anything you could be grilling or cooking outside or inside. And that's the other thing. It doesn't have to just be for the grill. You know, you can easily put this in your oven, close your oven door right on the wire, and it will work inside as well as it works outside.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a very versatile product, and you can always check it in real time. It tells you when it's done. It's got a bunch of cute little noises. When you first bring up the application, a very accessible web page comes up with different videos that you can listen to. Interestingly enough, the videos are very clear. They're very easy to understand. Even if you're not looking at them, if you're just listening, they're very easy to understand what the guy is doing. The learning curve on this is really simple. Hey, Chris, thumbs up, dude. You guys have done just an incredible, incredible job. Keep up the great work. And thank you so much for visiting with us today. Is there anything you'd like to share with us about what's coming up or whatever before we go?
We appreciate all the feedback. I mean, you know, definitely keep it coming. We can't say that we'll implement everything as fast as we did this time. We felt this was important to make it as accessible as we could. But any feedback, any problems you guys are having, feel free to email us, and we'll do our best to put it in the dev schedule so that we get it updated and make it as accessible as possible.
Yeah, what's your website and your contact? Some contact information.
Yeah, definitely. It's iGrillInc.com, and the email address is support@iGrillInc.com. And you send an email there, and we'll be sure to put it in the dev schedule.
So, Chris, let me ask you, do you have any, you talk about social networking and that kind of thing, of course, and I know you're here in the 21st century, so I'm sure you've got a Twitter page and a Facebook page and a Twitter feed. What are those for me?
Sure. Facebook is the iGrill Facebook page or iGrill FB page. And then iDevices Inc. is our Twitter page. You can go there. We have some offers that we're running right now. If you go out and review the iGrill, either in the App Store or on Amazon, and send us your review, good or bad, doesn't matter. We'll send you a free iGrill apron, which kind of protects your iGrill so it doesn't get wet or dirty or damaged.
Very cool. Well, Chris, thank you so much for visiting with us today. We really appreciate your time. And I'm going to get back to grilling or something and keep on doing what you guys do best, which is innovating. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
So that'll wrap it up for this episode of
Triple Click Home.
Thank you all for stopping by and tuning in. And we'll see you next month. But in the meantime, you should feel free to contact us. Send us an email to resources@serotalk.com. Leave us an iReport through iBlink Radio on your iPhone or your Android phone. Or call the Blab Line at 866-997-2522. You can also follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/TripleClickHome. I'm Buddy Brannon. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BBRANNAN. That's twitter.com/BBrannon.
And I'm twitter.com/PBosley. That's PBOSSLEY.
And I'm twitter.com/BlindPerspective. That's BLINDPERSPECTIVE.
So, yeah, thanks for tuning in, y'all. We'll see you next month.